And welcome back, everyone, to this week's PadreCast. We're coming off a pretty busy week. A couple big stories that had a lot of coverage, and one of which, the Backbreaker demo, is definitely a big topic of discussion. We had news on UFC Undisputed, which releases when you're listening to this. It'll probably be releasing tomorrow, or it's very soon, anyways. And then we had a few other pieces of news on a couple upcoming games and a couple games that are in the rearview mirror now. Hey, Fred, how you doing this week?
Not bad, Pasta. Just enjoying the Indiana weather. It's really odd. Like, earlier in the week it was lower 60s, and today it's upper 80s. So that's like typical Indiana weather.
Yeah, we've had some warmth here in Seattle, and then the last few days it's gone back down and gotten a little bit of rain. But yeah, I got the lawn cut just before all that happened, so I was pleased with that. Yeah, that's very important to me, landscaping. No. So this week was really the last few days have been dominated by Backbreaker releasing the demo. And, you know, this is something that I've been looking at for a long time, is very important to the game's possible success. And that's because we really haven't seen much on it. We've heard a lot about it, but that doesn't really hold a lot of weight when you're just a couple weeks from release. We haven't seen much gameplay at all, but we've finally gotten the demo and finally gotten a chance to try it out. And I definitely, you know, there were a few things that I really like about it, and I really do think there's some impactful things introduced here. But at the same time, there's several issues that are really dragging it down for me, and the more I play it, the more that becomes apparent. How much time did you get to spend trying out this demo?
Not too much, Pasta. I really did want to get quite a bit hands-on time with the demo, just so I could make a sound decision on whether I like it based off of the demo or not. So, I'm kind of just going to give a quick opinion of it, but I really didn't get too much hands-on times. Yeah, I know. I don't want to piss
anyone off.
Yeah,
be careful what you say.
Pretty much I didn't like it, and maybe it's just because I'm just not used to it, but I just didn't really like the feel of it. The camera is what really threw me off, and I don't know what I was doing at times, but all of a sudden I'd switch players, and I was a blocker instead of a guy with the ball, and I didn't know where I was going. So, I don't know. I wasn't too impressed with it, but like I said, I don't think I really had enough time with it to make a sound decision on whether I truly don't like it. But just first impression, I really don't care for it and don't see myself playing it.
Yeah, and that's definitely probably the most polarizing thing about Backbreaker is the camera angle. There's been a lot of discussion about it in different places. Natural Motion, who made the game, they really wanted to give this on-the-field experience, and that's why the camera is low. It's not quite first person, but it's third person close up, and it wants to give you that impact of being on the field and the experience. And there are some people who really like that, and I think it works in some areas of the game. And there are a lot of people who would prefer just a more standard camera angle, and it's really unfortunate that they didn't include any alternate camera angles, because the more I played it, the more I realized I think the game would play just as well from a standard camera angle. I don't see any reason why it wouldn't. And you're actually missing a lot of the action with this camera angle. You can only end up seeing what happened by watching replays in some instances. So where I have a problem with the camera angle is, and a lot of people seem to think it's a problem on defense, and I do to an extent in changing players. So what I've been doing is I just stick with a single player on defense, kind of like if I was in a superstar mode or a campus legend mode, where I would just stick on one guy for a whole play, and that's usually, you know, I'm having some success with that because of that. Once you change the camera angle mid-play, you don't know who it's changing to. You don't know what the situation is. So, you know, you may end up running the wrong direction. I had one instance where I was controlling a guy on defense, and I clicked over because I didn't even really know what was going on at this point in the play. I know a pass had gone out. I didn't even know if it was caught or anything,
yeah.
Right? So I switch over only to find out that I'm now controlling a guy who had intercepted the pass, and I run straight out of bounds. Instead of when I had daylight probably to the end zone. So that's just one instance of where it causes problems. But I don't have too much issue with it on defense otherwise, just because I've been sticking with one guy. Where I have the problem with the camera angle is as the quarterback. And I just don't like it. I feel like, number one, you can't tell where the pass rush is coming from. So there are a lot of sacks.
Yeah.
You don't really have that much time. Yeah, the sacks are off the charts right now. And that's probably something that would, over time, you'd adjust to and get more comfortable with. But also, I just feel, with this camera angle, I don't feel comfortable scanning the field, changing targets. I don't like the right stick for changing targets. I wish we had just a button select to throw to a certain receiver, because it just takes too much time. You can usually only get through one or two guys, and it's hard to see them over the line of scrimmage. And so basically, I feel like as a quarterback, I'm either locking in on one receiver and waiting for him to make a break, like on a timing route, or waiting for a guy to come across the middle so I can flip onto him real quick, or I'm just throwing it deep and praying that something good happens. It's a guessing. Really, I'm just there throwing and praying, and I don't feel like I'm really in control of what's going on. So that's where I have a problem with the camera angle. And I do wish they would have included a couple different options, or at least one different option zoomed out a little further. Because it's going to be tough for some people. It's going to be frustrating for some. And I don't think the game would have been hampered by pulling the camera out. And, you know, if there is a sequel to the game, I'm sure there'll be extra camera angles. But this is, you know, this is what we're stuck with for now. I'll start off with a couple of the things that I really like about the demo. And this first one is surprised me in just the impact it had on me and how it, gave me some sense of excitement that maybe I've been missing for a while, and that's the euphoria, the player interaction and tackling. Mm-hmm. It looks awesome. It really does. And you sit there and you know that really just about anything can happen on a given play. And it's true. You're not going to see the same exact thing happen twice. So the hits, things like that, are awesome looking. And I found myself, I turned off the auto replays at first because it plays after just about every single play. But then I decided to turn it back on because I was missing a lot of stuff. And so I'd rewatch the tackles and things like that. And it's pretty awesome. This is a game that's going to be really popular for posting highlights on YouTube and stuff. It already is with the demo. I like the running game a lot. I feel like I'm in pretty good control there. I don't have a lot of peripheral vision as the running back, but it feels really rewarding to pick up yards and to make a cut and to drive forward. I also really like the kick returns and kickoffs, more so than they have the tackle alley in the demo, but I actually think it'd be more fun to do like a kick return or kickoff mini game type of thing. All that stuff, a lot of fun, very fresh feeling to it, and I like it because of that. The problem is the more I've played the demo, the more issues have become apparent. So I've mentioned I don't like the passing game, primarily because of the camera angle, also because of the right stick to scan between receivers. It's also very unreliable to throw a lob pass the down and up on the right stick. Probably more than half the time it doesn't register for whatever reason. And then, you know, the controls are okay outside of that. I just think it's a little too reliant on the right stick. They do have a different camera, or not camera, they do have a different control scheme that you can try out, though. The biggest issues are AI related. So while I like the physics and everything it brings with that, the CPU AI has been horrendous. And it, you know, if this were to translate to a full, let's say, 8-minute quarter game, at the rate the CPU throws interceptions, which is averaged for me 2 to 3 each demo run through, the CPU would throw 16 to 24 interceptions in an 8-minute quarter game. So obviously that would be a problem, and that would completely wreck the game for me. I can't play a game where the CPU is throwing interceptions, 10 or more interceptions, let's just say 10 or more in a game. Even just outside of the interceptions that the CPU throws, Their offense has been completely inept. I don't know how many times I played through the demo, probably 15 or more, and I still haven't been scored on. And I've taken, in some instances, the worst defensive team up against the best offensive team, and they haven't been able to do anything against me except maybe get a few first downs. So the CPU AI on offense, but also on defense, the defensive backs, it seems like in any situation where they have to stop and wait for the ball to come, they just stand there or they run into each other. I've gotten a few touchdown passes just on lobbing the ball up, and three defenders in front of my receiver all stand there. It goes over their heads. I catch it and run in for a touchdown. It's not pretty. So the AI is really the biggest issue. And, you know, I don't think that's a huge surprise for a game that's in its first year. Those things take a long time to really build up and get right. And, you know, even a game like Madden, obviously the AI isn't perfect. And they've been working on that for 20 years. Mm-hmm. So it's never going to, you know, you're never going to get perfect there. And you can expect some problems. But those are really severe. And if they extend to the full version of the game, which we don't know, the 505 Games, the distributive put an embargo on media who have copies, can't talk about the game at all until June 1st, which is not common for sports games. I read some people who think that's the standard way things are done. It's not. Review scores are often held back. Talking about the game, being silenced from talking about the game at all, is not typically done for sports games. So we don't know if this is going to extend to the final game. I believe this demo is built off the final version, but we don't know if there's something wonky in there with, you know, 2 minute quarters and the CPU trying to push the ball harder than they would otherwise. There are also a bunch of exploits already being found that could, you know, if you were to say that CPU AI is troubling, maybe then in multiplayer, maybe then online, the game would play better, but there's a lot of exploits being found already that people are gonna use. QB sneak. A lot of people are using the QB sneak to run for 60, 70 yards with their quarterbacks. Just go straight down the field with QB sneak. Nothing the defense can do. Punt blocks and kick blocks, really easy to make happen. That's going to be exploited online as well. And then I also wanted to talk a little bit about penalties, because those aren't right on. I've seen pass interference called when there was none. I've seen no pass interference called, mostly when guys are getting laid out and completely knocked off their routes. And then there's roughing the kicker is a huge issue, where the CPU is roughing the kicker over and over and over. And there's nothing you can do about it. And then roughing the passer also, I've seen miscalled several times. So, I mean, these are all things that, again, it's a first-year title. It's going to be a while. It'd be a few iterations before it got exceptional in any of these areas. But there has to be a limit to them, to where the game is still fun to play and it doesn't hamper the experience too much. And if the demo is representative of the final version and the CPU can't move the ball and they turn the ball over like crazy and we have all these exploits online, it's going to be a mess. And there's really not much else to say about it except that, you know, the euphoria, awesome to watch, great for mini games. I went into this thinking that, you know, euphoria would be, you know, I wasn't certain if it would work for a football game. After playing the demo, I'm confident actually now that it would work for a football game, but it's not working in Backbreaker to provide a football game that anybody who's picking it up would be seeking out. So we'll see how that all turns out. And like you said, you didn't spend a lot of time with it, but if you did, I think you'd come across all these things. It's pretty widespread on the AI issues and stuff, and there's some questions we don't know what Natural Motion's going to do in regards to patches, if they'll patch the game at all, how effective they would be at patches, how long it would take them. These are all uncertainties. So we've still got, you know, just over a week until the Backbreaker hits store shelves, so we'll see what happens then. Unfortunately, people who have copies of the game aren't allowed to talk about if it's any different from the demo, which would have been nice to know. But yeah, so that's, you know, I just wanted to run through some thoughts. Later today on the site, I'll have up full impressions going over a lot of what I talked about now, going over more. And it'll be interesting to see what people think of it, because, you know, there's a lot of people want to defend the game or they want to tear it down. And I'm basically really torn on it because there are some really exciting things about it, but it's just not getting the job done in terms of a football game. And this has been playing it on the highest difficulty or on medium, which should present a challenge, and it hasn't because of the AI. All right, so there. I ran through my backbreaker thoughts. Everybody can bash me or whatever in the comments, but so far, actually, the comments on the articles are pretty comparable, I think, to what I feel about the game, and I've definitely gotten that vibe from Twitter also, so it'll be interesting to follow anyways, because I think they did break in with something that has potential here, but it may just not be all brought together here in a single package in the first year. So we'll move on now and talk about what I thought was the other big story of the week, and that was UFC, a couple UFC-related stories. And the first one was breaking the news on the, I guess you could say, call it THQ's version of EA's online pass. Basically, UFC copies will contain a code inside the box. You input that, you get access to all online functionality. If you don't buy the copy new, then you're going to have to pay to access online, and for THQ, that's going to be $5 as opposed to the $10 for the EA Sports games. And so, again, we've talked about this at length before, so not really to go into whether the idea of the online pass type system is right or wrong, but my gripe this week was with THQ. Basically, they were trying to cover it up, or cover it up for as long as they could, and it wasn't until their hand was forced that they admitted to the need for an online code, and then it took a while after that even to get a lot of details from them, and they're trying to sell it as a value add-on, which EA did also, but EA is actually offering a few things that THQ isn't. EA is offering that 7-day trial on each game, so even if you rent the game, you'd have 7 days to play online, which is pretty considerate, I would say, and there's no trial period with the THQ system with UFC. You either buy it or you don't play online at all. And so question comes in, you know, is it worth the pay online? Because UFC last year was pretty iffy online. This year we don't know anything about its online play, how well it's going to work. So asking people to pay for it is a little tougher in that regard. But it's still the general idea that they're trying to cut back on used game sales, trying to get a little bit of money out of that. It's just the way they handled it, and then the way they worded it. They weren't very upfront about things, and so we have the Fight Camp feature introduced this year. Now let's say you had a copy of UFC. Do you feel, you know, based on last year, based on what you know about it this year, that you would have paid to access online play?
I don't know, man. I was in the PFC for a little bit, and then it's just like with schedule restraints and everything, it was really hard to get online with someone. So other than that, I didn't even play online other than the PFC. So, if I had to pay to play this game online, I probably wouldn't. You know, I probably would just stick to playing offline. I seem to enjoy that a lot more anyways. It seemed like whenever I was fighting anyone online, I don't know if it was just I was so terrible at the game, but I think part of it is, it seems like with games in general, if you don't keep up with it and continue practicing every day, you're gonna fall behind all the online players who play the game religiously, you know. And I seem to, that happened to me when I would play this game online. You know, I would look at guys' records and they've already got 40, 50 matches under their belt, and I'm like three and two or something. So to me, it's like, I think I've hit a point in gaming where I don't nearly play as often online as I used to. And if already paying the $50 for Xbox Live and now paying more money for one game, no, I don't think I would be doing that.
Yeah. The other thing I had an issue with is not just that they're doing the online pass, but in order to get the full experience of UFC 2010 Undisputed, here's what you have to do, okay? You have to pre-order it, so you have to buy it new. You have to buy it from GameStop, and you have to get the PS3 version. That's the only way for $60 you get the full online, the full experience for UFC, because you have, okay, you need to buy it new so you can play online without paying additional, okay? You need to pre-order it from GameStop so you can get their exclusive four fighters from TUF. And then you need to get the PS3 version because it has its own exclusive fighters, plus it has its five additional classic fights. So you're really kind of pigeonholed into not only buying the game, but buying it their way, buying it at a single retailer. And I think that's just kind of like, I've been following to see if NCAA Football would have, because that's really the next one in line for EA Sports, where there's a gap between when they announce the online pass and if they would have a pre-order deal. And so far, I haven't seen a pre-order deal go up for GameStop, for NCAA, or Madden, where not only, you know, they already have this built-in pre-order now with having the code in the box. Forcing someone to pre-order it at a certain place, I think, then is crossing the line now, given that we have this online pass. Like, with these exclusive fighters and stuff, I don't want to buy it from GameStop. I want to buy it less. I want to buy it less from GameStop.
Yeah, you know? For me, the GameStop is literally like down the street from my house, so that's usually where I get most of my games. And I trade in a lot of my stuff. You know, I don't like going the eBay route. I don't know if it's just I'm too lazy or I don't want to deal with the hassle of, you know, possibly getting ripped off. So whenever I have games, I usually just go there and trade anything in and, you know, pre-order, just because, like you're saying, with some of this stuff, you're going to get exclusive things for pre-ordering with them. So I know that when I went in there and I picked up Splinter Cell, and, you know, I had some extra store credit left over, so I said, you guys got any promotions going for UFC? And he says, yeah, you get the, you know, exclusive fighter. So figured out what the hell, I'll throw down whatever store credit I had there and get it there. It's not because they were giving me those four exclusive fighters that I thought, oh, I need to go to GameStop and get it from them over someone else. It's just that's usually where I end up buying all my games anyways. So, you know, that's yes, mainly why. If let's say there was, I don't know, Game Crazy, or there was no GameStop and there was just Best Buy, I would get it from there and not even get it from GameStop.
Yeah, you know, it's really a matter of convenience, and that's why this whole GameStop thing bothers me, because not everyone has a GameStop nearby. So you're lucky enough that if you wanted to pre-order there for something specific, you can do that. Otherwise, someone either has to pre-order online, or, you know, maybe they just, they're local store isn't a GameStop, so kind of getting screwed in that regard. Mm-hmm. That's what bothers me about this, is don't tack on more over top of this online code thing, because the online code is a built-in pre-order incentive, essentially. That's never going to expire, because people are always going to want to get the new copy, assuming it makes fiscal sense. So that takes me into, you know, we're talking about online play and the code and stuff. And we've got a few early reviews for UFC out, and it's getting awesome reviews. It's gotten a 9 out of 10, perfect, and a couple perfect 5 out of 5s that I've found so far. And so I wrote a story about this because it bugs the shit out of me. Reviews coming out that don't even cover, and we're not even just talking about reviews, we're talking about perfect score reviews that come out and don't, they haven't even played online with their copy yet, because it hasn't been turned on. Online play hasn't been turned on. That's why we didn't even find out, you know, confirmation that there was a code. Nobody had to put the damn thing in to get online, because online wasn't functional. So we get these reviews now. Okay, 9 out of 10. I could almost buy that, but still, we have reviews that are saying, we hope, THQ says these things about online play. We don't know. We don't even know if the fight camps work. We don't know how laggy online play is going to be, and they're giving it a freaking perfect score.
Mm-hmm.
Killer, man. Over the years, I've done a couple articles about how online play has been ignored in reviews for a long time, because publications, it's not right, but publications want to get reviews out as early as possible because it gets them the most hits. So they're going to overlook online play very often. It's just, we haven't seen until maybe even this year with games like MLB The Show and NBA 2K, where they really started taking a hit for poor online. They finally started to pay attention. But then here we have UFC, and I think it's because it's a relatively new franchise, and it's really popular, and they want the hits. And they're pushing out reviews without even talking about online play, when that's a critical point to this game. It's the focus on head-to-head. Obviously, it's very, very good game for a career mode also, which has been improved this year. But man, I just can't get over these reviews that are talking about how online play should be better, or THQ is promising online play is going to be better, or the fight camps, they should make the game better. The fight camps should be great. Man, I'll tell you, that is a huge pet peeve of mine, and I will not let it go. So I'll be interested to see. It's Metacritic. Even if online play didn't work at all, no one could get online and they never fixed it, UFC 2010 Undisputed would still have several perfect score reviews.
I agree with you 100%. Even when we were running Madden Nation, I never wrote an actual review of the game until after the game was already out. The thing that I mainly did was write impressions. Hey, this is what's going on in this game. This is what I noticed. This is what I lacked. Every time, we would give impressions of online play, but the big button that was, there's no one else online. So, we're playing each other and we're giving impressions of each other when we play the game against, one other person. You could tell, right away, once the game releases and everyone goes online, something goes wrong. Shit usually hits the fan. And, then it's always like, oh, why didn't you notice this before? You were playing this game. You're just sucking up to EA. I really agree with you about how can you give a game a perfect score when a whole aspect of the game hasn't even been touched yet? You haven't even played it, and yet you're giving it a perfect score. Now, if they had an asterisk by it and said something like, offline play, it's a 10 out of 10. We're giving it an incomplete score now until we play online and then give it a final score, then that's totally different. But to say that it's a perfect game and then saying, well, we hope online play is going to be good, or, the company is saying that we're going to be able to do this, then yeah, in theory, that should be a perfect game. But we all know that online play is usually never perfect.
Yeah, I've gotten questions, and like you just said, it's exactly why. I've always done impressions and not reviews, and I've gotten questions about why don't I do reviews, I just don't generally believe in giving a numbered score. I don't think that's really a good way of me getting across my feelings on a game or getting across what I don't like about a game. Any outlet that does reviews with scores, there's no doubt about it. The reason they do it is for hits. There's nothing else about it that they do for other than to get hits. They put a score on it to get attention, and they put a score on it to get included in Metacritic and to get links from that. That's what reviews are all about, and these outlets will push out reviews as early as possible to get hits. That's what it's all about. And so, credibility-wise, you would want to wait until you played online, or like you said, put in a disclaimer that you'll update it once online play is up and running. The problem is, they're not going to get that score included in Metacritic as long as it's an incomplete score.
Mm-hmm.
I always do impressions because, look, I don't get to avoid criticism, to say the least, just because I don't put a score on my thoughts on a game. People still, agree or disagree. Rightfully so, or unjustifiably so, because it's always going to be opinions. I'm just not going to throw a score on it just for the hell of it. And some people want to see scores. Some appreciate all the text and explanation. But yeah, it's this UFC thing. It bothers me. to no end, and even those reviews haven't even talked about the online code thing. I suspect, you know, other than online not being turned on, I suspect that outlets that got copies of UFC probably had an embargo that they weren't allowed to talk about that. Who knows when THQ was going to announce it if it hadn't been discovered, because it seemed like they were caught off guard. They had to prepare a statement and stuff like that. They obviously didn't expect to have to announce it at that point, which is just, it's just really questionable to me how they went about this. So I just want to get that off my chest there, because it's been weighing heavily on me, Fred. The whole review thing and the whole online play thing. All right, so now that that's off, I'm going to throw out a little bit of information on a couple other news, and then we'll go on to the entertainment, which you know, there's a few things to talk about there. But NHL 11, you know, we're not huge hockey guys. But a couple announcements for NHL 11. They got the license to Canadian Hockey League, which contains three sub-leagues. And then they also announced, along with some screenshots, that the game's going to have a real-time physics engine. So people are now, of course, attributing that to Backbreaker. and once Madden improves their physics, I'm sure it'll be because of Backbreaker. And then we also had patches for MLB 2K10 and MLB 10 The Show come out. Both patches introduced problems. MLB 10 The Show was allowing runs to score on third outs, and that has since been fixed with another patch. And MLB 2K10, now even you edit a player's name, it won't change on their jersey. And also the patch didn't do anything to address injuries or errors, which are pretty much non-existent in the game. These games are done, just to get that out of the way. MLB 10 The Show, MLB 2K10, there's going to be no more post-release support other than maybe some roster updates, weekly roster updates for the show, and who knows how often roster updates for 2K10, because they don't really keep a schedule. All right, there's the sports game. We're done. Now on to entertainment, and I'm still catching my breath from my rant. Okay, and this is very painful to some. Megan Fox, not going to be in Transformers 3, Fred, but we do have Ken Jeong.
Yes, that was my biggest concern. You know, when I saw that go up, you know, I was just searching for that name on the front page there, Ken Jeong. You know,
you search my website for Ken Jeong every
yeah,
day.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mainly wanted to make sure that he was in it, and, you know, I was watching The Hangover again this weekend, and saw his little appearance in there, and of course, you know, got me fired up for Transformers 3. So when I saw that Megan Fox was going to be in there, I was like quickly just looking to make sure that at least Ken Jeong was going to be in there.
That he hadn't been axed.
Right. As long as he's in there, I think it's good to go for me.
Okay. He hasn't called Michael Bay Hitler yet that I've heard of. So I think he's safe. But not only Ken Jeong. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about how expansive this cast for Transformers has gotten. I mean, you have Ken Jeong. You think he's okay? He's he's the comic relief guy, right?
Yeah.
typical Michael Bay type comic relief guy. But you've also got Jamie Kennedy, who there's another questionable one. Okay, I got the questionable ones out of the way. You got John Malkovich, Frances McDormand. And then some of the returning guys, obviously Shia LaBeouf and some of the others. And you know, now they have to cast someone in the love interest role for Shia LaBeouf's character, Sam Witwicky. They gotta bring somebody new in. And there's already been a rumor that it could, at the top of the list, it could be the girl who's in Prince of Persia, which is coming out in just a week. And she seems to be atop the list, and I kind of, you know, accounted that too. She's working on that. She worked on that Bruckheimer film, Prince of Persia. Bruckheimer and Bay have that relationship, so maybe there's something there. You know, do you want just the eye candy in Transformers, or do you want somebody with some acting chops? Because Megan Fox, I loved her in the first one, incredibly hot, right? And she kind of fit she wasn't terrible. And then the second one, I think people started to say, okay, she can't really act. So maybe, you know, it started to stand out more once the shock of her looks kind of wore off in that first one.
Yeah, well, I think the second one was just bad overall. You know, it didn't matter if it was Megan Fox or a serious, Oscar-winning actress in that role. It didn't matter.
Oh, I can't even imagine somebody's a really good actress in that role.
Yeah, it was going to be a terrible movie either way, you know. And I don't know, man. It's like I think I was so let down by Transformers 2. Not that the first one was some great movie. I think that the nostalgia of just growing up watching Transformers and hearing those names and those voices and, you know, just like the opening scene when that Decepticon just transforms and you hear that noise that those Transformers make when they, you know, turn them from robots into vehicles or whatever. But, you know, for me, I don't care. I mean, like, yeah, I did like looking at her and, you know, like you said, eye candy, but... at this point, I just want a good movie. If the chick's ugly, I wouldn't even care. I just want, the third one to be better than the second, and I don't think that's gonna be hard to do.
Yeah, Megan Fox came out, or her representatives came out and said that she decided to leave the film. I don't really buy that because her career has not been, you know, Transformers launched her career, and it hasn't been going all that well as of late. She was supposed to break out in the Diablo Cody one. I forget the name of it off the top of my head. Pretty recently, and that one kind of tanked. And then after that, she, you know, in Jonah Hex coming up, but from the trailer and her accent, I don't think people are gonna be real excited about her in that. Other than to just watch her again. Other than just to see her, I don't think she's gonna break out as an actress from that. I don't think she probably left this because she wanted to, but who knows? Everybody, there's always spin in Hollywood. Who knows? I thought this was interesting, and I posted about it over the weekend. Time Warner and several big studios are in talks, and we're not sure really how preliminary these talks are, but they're in talks to create an on-demand service where movies would be delivered on demand to homes as early as a month after they release in theaters. 30 days is the time frame they give. And so you would have a movie like, Iron Man 2 comes out a month later. You can watch it on demand at home. Price would be probably between $20 and $30. And my initial reaction to that is that seems like a pretty good price for what they'd be offering. And I know as an individual, maybe that's not worth it, but you know, couples, families, would save a lot of money considering ticket prices these days, would save a lot of money by staying home, not just ticket prices, but also food prices. And you skip the hassle and it's before it comes out on DVD. Would it be worth it to you to pay $20 to $30 to watch a movie at home a month after it comes out?
Yeah, you know, I think what you kind of touched on was the fact that for, like, couples or families, it's really good value. $20 to $30 to just watch a movie saves my wife and I a lot of money, you know? We go to the movies, and if we don't catch a matinee, let's say we catch, you know, evening show, we're looking at about $8 a piece or so for the tickets only. So that's $16. By the time you buy popcorn and sodas, you know, all that stuff, that's like almost $30. So it's like it's the same thing, but I think for us, we both get tired of catching, like, you know, we can't usually go opening weekend to some of these primetime showings because it's going to be crowded with, you know, 13 through 16 year olds trying to be funny and you're trying to watch some movie, you know. So for me, I'd rather watch it at home. Plus, I have a really kick-ass home theater system, so you know, I enjoy watching movies at the house. And you know, on demand, we're gonna probably get them in high def as well. So you know, I really see a big advantage of this for someone like myself.
Yeah, I would say, you know, I enjoy the theater experience for some movies. So comedies, I tend to enjoy a comedy more if the crowd is laughing a lot. And then also action movies just because of the big screen and the sound.
Yeah.
Now, dramas, thrillers, I'd rather watch them at home.
Yeah.
And a lot of times I wait for those on DVD for that specific reason, just because much more comfortable at home and settling in, and it's a quiet environment and I can, you know, do whatever I want, watch it whenever I want. So I think there's some things there, and then also you have the effect of 3D IMAX. You're not going to get that at home yet. So if
Yeah.
that's important to someone, they're still going to go out to the theater. My thing with this is, okay, a month after release, I'm not sure. Usually, if I want to see a movie, I go out right away. So Iron Man 2, I want to see that, first day it's out, or in some cases, the screenings I go to, even though I have to wait in line for hours, I want to see it right then. I want to see it as soon as possible. If I can wait a month to see a movie, I can probably wait 4 months to see it on DVD and Blu-ray. So I'm not sure how many I would pay for, but I'll tell you, it would save a lot of money to if it was my family and I or friends and I, just to sit down and pay $20, $30 instead of all of us. If you go at night here in Seattle, regular standard ticket, non-3D is like $14 or something a ticket. Then if it's 3D, we're talking like $16, $17. So that's a lot of money when you start to add it up with people, and then also the popcorn and stuff, which I have to get it. All right, I have to get my popcorn when I'm out. But it's like popcorn and drink is like $13. Shoot me in the head right there. So I'd rather stay home in most cases, unless it's a big event movie, or unless it's a really a comedy that I think would play well in a crowded environment. So I don't know. And this is something else I mentioned in the article. Don't know if this is going to happen. Theaters are going to hate this idea, because the cut at the box office, and this is something I'm not sure a lot of people have an understanding of, distributors make deals with the theater chains, where they get a certain percentage of the box office take week to week. So the more popular a movie is, usually the bigger percentage that the distributor gets back. So an opening weekend is usually, on average, 90 to 95% of the box office take goes back to the distributor and the production company. So the theater's only getting 5%, which is why they always talk about, they make their money at the snack bar. That's why the prices have to be so high. But the longer a movie lasts in a movie theater, the more money that theater starts to make on tickets. So a second week, it might drop to 85%, and then the third week, it might be 80%, and then the fourth week, it might be the theater's taking in, after the fourth week, they might be taking in 40%, 50% of the box office take. So a movie that lasts long in theaters is really an important thing to their bottom line. So when you get to where a month out, people can start watching that at home instead, that's gonna, if, okay, maybe Avatar isn't the best example, but let's say it wasn't so predicated on 3D. Avatar is still making money in theaters, even though it's out on Blu-ray and DVD. It's still making money in theaters. Theaters are making pure profit off of that movie now. If people were able to watch it at home and decided the theater experience wasn't worth it, that would really cut into what makes them run. So they're gonna fight this. They had Disney wanted to make, and this was a story a while back, Disney wanted to make Alice in Wonderland. They wanted to cut back from that 4 month window to like 3 months and get it on DVD after 3 months. And theaters fought that to the bone. They threatened to boycott the movie. Disney eventually caved in. They will, if most of the distributors here, most of the big movie companies, if they decide to do this, theaters aren't going to boycott their movies. They aren't going to be able to do that, obviously. But they're going to make it known that they don't like this, and they're going to try their best to prevent them from going through with this. So it's going to be fascinating to see if this actually happens. And I was actually surprised to see how seriously this seems to be going right now, and how they seem to be close to some sort of a deal and getting this up and running, possibly by the end of the year. So we'll see what happens there. Okay, so I reviewed Get 'Em to the Greek. I saw an early screening of this. Comes out on June 4th, and I thought it pretty much sucked. It was a bad movie that had some funny moments. And I'm not trying to discount the funny moments, because there was some pretty funny stuff in the movie. But there was nothing good about the movie. It was just a series of events over a short period of time. The characters were unlikable, and even Dylan / Jerkface Fave thought the movie was really funny. He liked the movie a lot, actually. So we had some arguments about this, but even he agreed that the characters were unlikable. Either they did stupid things, which was done for a laugh, or you couldn't relate to them, or they were stupid, you didn't understand their actions. It was basically just a series of events, and it was very in-your-face comedy. And so I was disappointed with it. I knew that going in, but I was still disappointed in it because it was from the same guy who made Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and this is kind of, I wouldn't call it an exact sequel, but it's kind of a spin-off sequel. And I love that movie. Forgetting Sarah Marshall's great. I love that movie. One of my favorite comedies of the last few years. And I'm really disappointed in this one. Funny moments again, but not a good movie at all. And Dylan would say he liked it a lot, and he'd say, go see it. I'd say, if you at all can wait for DVD, it's probably a good idea to wait for DVD. It's I don't know how it's going to do. I think it'll probably do decent in theaters, but I think it's probably going to get mostly bad reviews. I did notice a couple people walk out of the theater after a little while.
Wow.
But it was also an older couple people, so, and I don't think that's going to play well. This movie's going to play well at all to an older crowd. It is very in-your-face comedy. And I just didn't like the characters. The one standout was P. Diddy, actually. He was genuinely funny, even though I didn't particularly like his character either. He was actually the standout comedy star of this movie. So if you like P. Diddy, I think you would enjoy him in this movie. Or even if you don't, maybe if you don't like P. Diddy, you'd enjoy him in this movie because he's a little over the top, but his delivery is actually pretty entertaining. Get him to the Greek June 4th. I gave it 1.5 stars out of 5. My lowest rating ever I've given a movie, tied with like Couples Retreat, which, I'd compare him that. Get him to the Greek, worst movie, worst comedy I've seen in a while. But it does have funny moments. It does have some redeeming moments. I admit to that. But the total package was not very good. And to close out, we had a lot of TV news this week, and at the upfronts, all the networks announced their fall schedules, and so I have coverage on each schedule laid out. You can check out on the entertainment side of the website, and a couple shows really appealing to me off the bat that I think could be big hits. J.J. Abrams, his new show Undercovers for NBC. Mid-season, we'll see Terra Nova from Steven Spielberg, which has almost got a Jurassic Park vibe to it. Although it's going to be kind of back time traveling, back in the past. No Ordinary Family on ABC, which is kind of a superhero themed drama, and then a couple other notes. Parks and Recreation, I was surprised that got bumped to mid-season. And Survivor moves to Wednesdays. Our show.
Yeah.
Moves to Wednesdays. And we can talk about the outcome, because I'm still pissed about that.
Oh, yeah. I was thoroughly pissed about that one. I think you and I both wanted either Russell or Parvati
either
to win.
Yeah.
I kept telling my buddy, who's a big Survivor fan, I said, dude, I'm going to be happy either way, as long as it's not Sandra.
Yeah.
And then, of course, she's the one who wins, and I'm thinking, Jesus Christ. Like, I just knew that this was going to happen. It's just these bitter jury members, man, who just, to me, that's all it is. It's like, who are you nice to, and who is going to get your vote? And that's really the only reason why Sandra won. So it even pissed me off even more, the fact that she's over there, saying she's the greatest Survivor player of all time, and I'm thinking, are you kidding me? The only reason you won is because people hate Russell,
Both seasons she won because the person up against her, or the people up against her in this case, were unlikable and screwed over people in the jury.
Yeah, and that's the thing, man, is like, okay, I could see if she had, one aspect of the game that she was good at, but she's not. She's a bitch. She's a self-proclaimed bitch. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She sucks at the challenges. So really, it's just luck, you know? And I forgot who it was. I think it was the guy who was the fireman. Is his name Tom?
Yeah, yeah.
He was the guy who was saying, you know, a lot of this game is luck, and I really think that that's really the only reason why she won.
I thought Russell made a good point in the reunion show where he talked about how Sandra's whole strategy was to get Russell out, like from the first day. Her plan was to get him out. And so how is the winner whose plan completely failed a good survivor player?
Well, and then the other thing too is how she said, you know, the only people who like you is your family sitting right there. You know, if America had a vote, you would not win.
Yes.
And it's just stupid because he won the vote that America gets for the best survivor of the show. And I know she sure as hell wouldn't have won. She wouldn't have gotten my vote. I know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, America recognizes the people who play the game, and on the island, they seem to get caught up in those interpersonal relationships. I mean, they talk about outwit, outplay, outlast. They talk about, you know, social game is one aspect. Then you have challenges, and you also have strategy. And some seasons that, you know, there's a balance to that, and the person who wins deserved it. But the last couple seasons, it's been all about social game. It's been all about who has the most friends on the jury, who's the most unlikable in the finals. Who do you want to go up against that you don't think people want to vote for? And that's what's been frustrating. And I don't know if there's a way to fix that. I don't think giving America a vote would fix that, because there's too many variables involved in that. But yeah, it's frustrating, and I'm getting real tired of I love Survivor, and I really enjoy the seasons, and I love everything until they read those final votes, and then it just like ruins everything, and like it's so frustrating. But I think the interest, you know, at least I think most people recognize that Russell and Parvati are probably two of the best players of all time in terms of playing Survivor, and so you know at least there's that, and you know that. It'll be fun to go back to now, brand new people in this next season and see how that goes, instead of being locked in and I have my favorites and stuff, because I always, you know, it's painful. It's painful to see them go out. It's painful, especially when I thought they deserved to win. So, but yeah, that moves to, that moves to Wednesdays, and Wednesdays at 8, where I think it'll probably dominate that time slot just like it did on Thursdays. So, CBS... moving Survivor, not a huge deal. Well, I don't think it'll change much, but so yeah, check out all the fall schedules there. A lot of cancellations news, and then also all the schedules laid out. So I think that'll do it for this week's PadreCast. We're gonna have a lot of coverage coming up, especially with E3 down the line. We also will be kicking off PFC, the UFC Online League. Make sure you get into the forums. We'll be announcing fighter assignments very shortly, possibly even today, or they may be out as you're listening to this. Who knows? So, all right. Thanks, everyone. Thanks to Fred again joining in, and everyone for listening in this week. And we'll be back again next week, as usual. Everyone, take care.